Up to Perek Beis Pasuk Zayin. We're in the middle of Pasuk Zayin. We did not yet do the Targum. Again, Perek Beis Pasuk Zayin. We're going to learn the Zeche Lula Nishmas.
Aryeh
Ben.
Meir
Matisyahu Halevi. Meir's Neshama have an Aliyah. Okay, Perek Zayin, Perek Beis Pasuk Zayin. Vayhi Oymenes Hadassah. He Esther Bastodo. Mordechai raised Hadassah. Who is Hadassah? He Esther Bastodo. This is Esther, the daughter of his uncle. Okay, so this is a cousin. Ki ein lo ovo aim. She was an orphan in the real sense of the word. She was beautiful in form and in appearance. And when her parents started, Mordechai took her as a bas. I'll take her as a wife. We discussed this yesterday. Okay, I came across some new things yesterday in preparation. Why did the Pug Megill have to beat around the bush? Why can't it just say openly that he took her as a wife, as an Isha? It's a very simple answer. Because this Megillah... Good morning. It was written in the time of Ahasuerus. So if they would see what it said, they would see that it's really his wife. What? I'm married to an Ashes Ish. This is your wife. It would not have public opinion. It would not go off well. Okay, with this revelation that really she was married to Mordechai. So he wrote Labas, and Klal Yisrael know how to darsh in the pasuk Al Tikri Labas Ela Labayis, but it would totally fly over the radar of the Umos Olam. They would not even think of picking up this nuance, this deek in the pasuk. Okay, now let's see the Targum. The Targum, we're into the Targum Pasuk Zayin. Okay, we'll do the best that we can. I don't really know the translation of all the words. I don't really have, unfortunately, the full amount of time that I would need to properly look up all the words. But let's see what it says. V'hava mirabeyos Hadassah. And Mordechai would raise Hadassah. He Esther beras Achvoy. This is the son of his brother. Achvoy means a brother. Is that what it means, Achvoy, or does it mean uncle? I'm not sure what Achvoy means. Achvoy maybe means, let's assume it means his uncle. We'll assume that, because it was Bas Dodo. I'm assuming the word Achvoy is the translation for the word Dodo. Let's assume it means over here, it was the daughter of his uncle, which makes her Esther his cousin. The Amai Havi Karula Hadassah. Why was she called Hadassah? Al Di Havi Tzadekta Vitzadikaya, because she was righteous. Because tzadikim, male tzadikim, female tzadikim, dimsilu la'asa tzadikim, tzadekta vitzadikaya, the righteous people are compared to hadasim. Period. Esther havikarla al. Now, why was she called Esther? We have two names for her, Hadassah and Esther. She's called Hadassah to indicate, according to Targum, that she was righteous, tzadekes. And she's called Esther. Havikol Maldi Havit Sniya Beveisa de Mordechai Shavin Vechamei Shinin, because she was Tsanua. She concealed herself in the home of Mordechai for 75 years. Now notice here the Targum is coming to tell us, taking the opinion that she was 75 years old. We discussed yesterday that Hadassah's Begematria 74. A careful calculation we discussed yesterday tells us that from the time of Golos Yehoyachin to the time of she being selected as the queen was exactly 74 years. That fits very well with the Hadassah, the Gematria 74, which, as we discussed yesterday, is extremely significant in the moment when she was, when they went into exile. At that moment in time is when HaKadosh Baruch Hu planted the seeds for the rebuilding of the Beis HaMikdash, similar to Yocheved, the mother. Esther is the mother of the Goyel. To some degree, Esther was Yocheved was the mother of the Goyel. To some degree, Esther was also the mother of the Redeemer. Who was the Redeemer in this sense? It was Daryovesh HaParsi, who gave permission to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash, was happening exactly the same, exactly when they were leaving. But over here, that's not what the Targum says. The Targum says she was 75 years old. He's either not taking the Gematria seriously, or he learns you have Hadassah with the Koilel, with the word itself is 75. Next, Navolohavi Chazos Ape Givar Elohein Ape Mordechai. She did not see the face of any other person besides the face of Mordechai. The Isavid lo lisur veino, because he raised her. Lisur bene means that he served for her as a lesur bene, which means like a nurse. Mordechai served as the omen, right? He omen as hadassa, as the one who raised her. Arum les la abba v'ima, because she had no parents. Ve'ulemta shapirta revu, she was extremely beautiful. She was a young maiden. Shapiras revu, had a beautiful complexion. Ve'shapiras chezu, revu means, I guess, the toyar, her form, and a beautiful appearance. Uvidan demis avua ishta aras b'me'in di'ima. And the moment when her father died, she was in a fetus inside the womb of her mother. V'chad yiledas yosa ima. And when her mother gave birth to her, her mother died. In other words, her mother died during childbirth. V'nasba. So here the Targum makes it clear as day that he married her. The Targum is also taking the opinion that she was literally the wife of Mordechai. Mordechai lay b'veise. Then he went and he took her as wife in his home. Bahava korle bras, and Vinaspa means he took her. Vinaspa Mordechai le bebeise, Bahava korle bras, he called her his daughter. Okay, so the basic yisod over here is the main yisod. This is that Hadassah and Esther. Hadassah, she was at tzadekes. Esther at tzanua, she was hidden in the home of Mordechai for 75 years. She did not see the face. If you take this Targum literally, it's very shocking. She did not see anyone else outside. She was completely concealed. How could that possibly be? To be completely locked up and not see, have contact with human beings other than Mordechai. That's the literal translation of the words of the Targum. She was beautiful in form and appearance, and she was taken, and Mordechai took her to his home, and he called her. He called her his daughter. Okay, let's go to the next pasuk. So it was one who was heard. When it was heard, the law, the decree of the king, and the Dvar HaMelech Vidaso. Okay, two different expressions, which I'm not sure exactly the difference between the two. The law and the two different expressions of the law. And when it was gathered, the time came when women were gathered to Shushan Habira, to Yad Hegoy, to the Yad, the authority of Hegoy. Batilokach Esther, she was taken by force. Okay, the word batilokach is the form there where she was taken against her will. She was discovered. El beis hamelech, el yad hegai shomer hanashim, she was taken by force. We mentioned, I just forgot to mention that when we learned about the pekidim, it's very interesting that some of the mefarshim explain the reason why the afkeid and pasuk gimel, the afkeid hamelech pekidim b'chol medinos malchuso. The Yikbitz was called Nara Visula. It wasn't just that they should take beautiful women. The Pekidim were necessary to make sure to remove beautiful women that were related to Vashti. Because there was a fear that these beautiful women would sabotage, would assassinate Achashverosh. Obviously, this was not 100% accepted in society that Achashverosh executed Vashti Hamalka, especially people who were her relatives, people that were descendants of the Malchus of Bavel. Koresh Modai took over an old regime. This was the new regime, and obviously there was resentment among the predecessors. Like, look what happened in Iraq. The United States came in to make the coalition. All the people, the old generals, all of the old, they were not so happy to be displaced and not offered a new position in government. So obviously there's always a concern for the people from the previous regime if they're not going to be asked to serve and their authority will be taken away from them. The Pekidim is an expression of officers who rule with force. It's a little bit strange. So here, what are we trying to do in this case? We're trying to collect beautiful women. You don't need someone to come with a gun, with a weapon, and a badge, and say, I'm a marshal, a federal marshal, I'm here to go take this beautiful woman to the king. The beautiful women will go on their own. They'll be very happy to go. They get a nice stipend. They can go shopping in Saks. They get perfume-free cosmetics. They might have a chance of being a beauty queen. It was a big covet for the family if one of these girls was selected to go to the king. So why do you have to have an officer with a badge and a weapon demanding you come with me. You just have someone, just send a letter. Yeah, send a letter from Harvard, you've been accepted to Harvard. You'll come running. You don't need. The answer is no, there were people, they had to prevent people from coming. Because there was a real fear that women who were related, there were many beautiful women that were related. Vashti was beautiful, so obviously they were terror. Yeah, exactly. They were terrorist cells, special spies that would penetrate the inner circle of the king. Now that they're going to be coming to the king and they're going to meet every night, the king met with another girl, at least one girl a night. Who knows what she can do? Who knows? Maybe she'll bring in some secret weapon and murder, assassinate Hamelech Achashverosh. So therefore, it was the secret service that was in charge of selecting the beautiful women, not just an ordinary commission who did not need to be specially trained. It was the CIA, Secret Service, NSA, whatever these are, the agencies who specialize in filtering out terrorist cells. The Afgad Hamelech Pikidim B'chol Midinos Malchuso.
Say that, then how could they vet Esther?
How could they vet Esther? So she slipped through. Look at this country. Look at this country. Look what's going on the border. Okay, so Enochanam, that's one of the Enochanam, she slipped through. Okay, also explains, this very strong word explains this week's parasha. Yosef advised Paro of the Afkeh, HaMelech Pekidim, I'll call me, what the Bozo say? To V'chimesh, as Eretz Mitzrayim. Why did Yosef select with Pekidim? This is part of the Chochmah. Don't just appoint a commission to collect. There's going to be corruption. There's going to be theft. If I'm telling you the word is that there's a famine, people, if you're going to just appoint any Tom, Dick, and Jerry to go and collect the grain, they'll hoard it for themselves. There'll be special secret silos where they'll be filtering, they'll be channeling the wealth of the country to prepare for the famine. And then when the famine comes, there'll be a black market. They'll go and they'll be using the funds and the grain of the king. Therefore, Yosef advised the Afgad Pekidim. The word pocket means an officer who has authority, who has a weapon, who has power of life and death. No one's going to stop when they come to collect the grain from the people from the farmers who grow the grain. There's no monkey business. There's no nonsense. There are inspections. There's punishment. There's accountability. Every stalk of grain that grows has to be recorded officially with threat of punishment in case there's going to of corruption. So it's a powerful word. It's not just a word. V'yafkeid ha-melech pekidim, let's just go take anyone, take someone off the street, and he'll go from house to house and put out flyers and tell people, would you like to sign up? Sign up for the king. It's a lot more sophisticated than that due to danger. Word pekidim always connotes there's a danger and there has to be some accountability and some protection, security, and safety in the technique that's being employed to achieve the desired goal.
Did Jewish people come into any effect here at all? Whether Esther was Jewish or not Jewish?
Well, we're going to have that very soon. I mean, we have that soon. Ain Esther Magedes Molata V'Yesama. This is one of the great miracles that for nine years, she was able to keep a secret. Most people can't keep a secret more than 5 minutes.
What? Secret is more than that, that other people would not rat her out, because the average Jew probably had to know who she was.
They had an agenda.
Nobody said anything.
Can you imagine the National Enquirer? Can you imagine what they would dig up?
No school bitch. She probably wanted to play off people, and nobody said anything. That's what I heard her focus on.
Didn't we just say she was hidden?
She was hidden. No, that's so that was part of the success.
Nobody would know.
Possibly. Well, that's how far you want to take the Targum. The Targum is saying something shocking. The Targum says, and the Midrashim elaborate, she was basically locked up as you would think like a hostage, a prisoner, had no contact with the outside world for 75 years. I mean, what are we talking about over here?
Why was that?
For 10 years.
What?
He doesn't understand.
What happened? Something happened? Yeah. He locked her up.
In other words, he's not going to answer the questions.
For 10 years.
What?
Okay, it's bizarre.
It's very bizarre. But this was part of the miracle case. Let's see what it says over here. So she was taken to the Kibbutz Naros, Mrs. Eliane Goy. Okay, so she was taken to Yad Hegai Shomer Hanashina. Let's see what it says over here in Rashi. Rashi Pasuk Ches. Is there a Rashi? No Rashi. Pasuk, let's see the Targum, Pasuk Ches. Vahava kad ishtema piskam kiroz malka. It was then that it was heard, the piskam kiroz malka. Ugezerte. So he I think he comes to really answer our question. What's the Dvar HaMelech Vidoso? Gzera has a connotation of punishment. Anyone that does not follow the law will be punished. So the Dvar HaMelech means there's a positive command, a decree, and the violation. So not everyone will follow. Not everyone will sign up for Obamacare. So what's going to happen if you don't sign up? There's a penalty. So Achashverosh was fearful of the penalty, and that's what allowed her to be discovered and allowed her to be taken to the king, to the house of the king. So we have the Piskom Kroz Malka, that's the mitzvah saseh, Ugezerte, and the lo saseh, the punishment. Anyone that does not abide by the law of the king will be punished. Uve is kanoshus, it was when it was collected, gathered. The Uleimon Sagion, many noshim, Lishushan Biranto, to Shushan Abira, Liad Hegoi Viida Boras Esther Bionosa. So here it says he's focusing on the word Vat. The Gemara actually says Vatilokach. Doesn't say Vatelech or Vayikach. Vatilokach has a connotation that she was taken against her will. And that's exactly what the Targum says. Viida Boras Esther Bionosa. She was taken against her will. The Is Alas. She was elevated. Lebeis Malka. Lida. To the authority, the Hegai Nitir Nishaya, the guardian of the women. Now there is a Medrash, the Medrash says, the Medrash compares Achashverosh to David HaMelech, two kings. Both of them needed a woman to serve, to assist them. Achashverosh needed a queen, and David needed a Seichenes. He was in his old age, and his body was not producing enough warmth. He needed an Isha to be a Seichenes, to minister to David, that would increase his body temperature. So there, the Medrash notes the difference. Let me read the words of the Medrash. The Medrash notes the difference in, I think it's Esther Rabbah, if I'm not mistaken. This is a very popular, I'm sure you know this Medrash. This is a popular Medrash. Can we contrast the difference between give me one moment. Let me. I know I have it over here. He records it over here in the back. It's going to take me too long to find. But the basic idea, we'll come back to another time. But the basic idea is that when David needed a Sechenes, the Avishag was the one that was ultimately selected. There they said they're only going to select one woman. The command was the king only needs one woman. Here Achashverosh said he wants all of the women. So what Achashverosh did was foolish, because anyone that had a daughter would take his daughter and would try to persuade her to hide. It would be good advice if a person can hide their daughter, because Achashverosh, good morning, after selecting and interviewing and living with all of these women, he would only ultimately select one as his queen. And all of the other women, their reputation and their life would be destroyed. Because we'll see later on, after the women went and they were with the king, they spent the night with the king, they were sent to another location where they basically remained agunos for the rest of their life. because the rule was, since this woman already was with the king, it's a bezoin for the malchus for her to marry a commoner. So therefore, but on the other hand, the king that does not necessarily want to live with her anymore. So these women, their lives would pretty much come to an end. If they were not selected to be the queen, they would be locked up in some palace for the rest of their lives and would be living agunos. The only one that would be selected would be one person, which in this case was Esther. But David HaMelech never had such an agenda. David HaMelech said he's only going to interview Nashim, and the one that David HaMelech selects will be taken as a wife. So it comes out, the difference is, would people try to hide from the officers of the king? Achashverosh ultimately only needs one queen. That's the goal. The goal is, I want to have one queen. But his technique in first living with all of these women was disgusting, and that technique would defeat the purpose, the goal of what he's trying to accomplish. I want to find the queen. So everyone should come forward. But you realize, just coming forward, the chance of you being selected is 1 in a million, and in the process of coming forward, your life comes to an end, your life is ruined. So the people who are really beautiful and people who are sophisticated, have seichel, are going to do everything in their power to run away from Achashverosh, and ultimately he's not going to find the candidate, the person that he really is searching for. David HaMelech, which is not interested in living with all of these women, he's just looking for the proper queen, says, I'm only going to select one. So no one is going to suffer going for a job interview. Therefore, everyone who has something to offer, who feels that they are a proper candidate, would run to appear in front of the officer and say, I am a possible candidate for the job, for being the queen. So this contrast between David, and there are a lot of diyukim, I don't have the psukim in front of me now, but there are many diyukim to show the difference between David was a chacham, whereas Achashverosh was a melech tippish. He's harming himself. He's not going to find the ideal candidate because all of the women are going to flee from his presence. Okay, let's go to the next pasuk. Pasuk Tes. Vatitav hanaro ve'enov. The Nara was pleasing in the eyes of the king, Vatisa Chesed Lifanov, and she brought up in front of who is the Ve'enov? Is the Ve'enov referring to Hegai?
Yes.
Hegai. She was pleasing in his eyes, Vatisa Chesed Lifanov, and she Chutshel Chesed Moshu Cholecha, Vatvayevahel, and swiftly, in a very quick notice, it was quickly brought before her, Estam Rukecha, her cosmetics, Vies Monosecha. The monosecha is food. Okay, we're going to discuss in a few moments that the people that were being raised, it was like cattle on a farm. You have to feed them a special feed because there are certain types of food which promote not necessarily good health, but promote a good complexion that might have side effects later on in life, but we're not concerned about the side effects later on in life. What's concerned now is for the next couple of years that she should look beautiful. So they fed these nashim a special diet. That is the monosecha, and we're going to see in a few moments that was going to be problematic for Esther, being that she has a kosher diet. The monosecha were not kosher. Chazal say it was chavila, it was a pig, it was pork. Pork was at that time accepted to be the food of choice, which would promote a beautiful appearance. The fat and the chazarai in the chazar is what caused the person to look beautiful. And obviously Esther was not able to eat this food because she was Jewish, but if she would refuse to eat this diet, it would reveal that she is Jewish, and that would be problematic. So she had to come up with different excuses in the drashim how to avoid eating this food. But there are two things: there are cosmetics, and then there are monos. Okay, the Mefarshim. Okay, I'll just point out right now because the commentators they take note. The word tam rukach is written mole. Tam rukach. There is a yud after the kuf. There is a yud after the hey. Tam rukach. Just like we mentioned yesterday, Yerushalayim. In the Megillah, many words are spelled mole. The only place in Tanakh where Yerushalayim is spelled mole with a yud at the end is in the Megillah. Here also, Tam Rukech is spelled mole. But when it says monoseha, it is choser. And the commentators explained the difference is because it came to the cosmetics, she accepted the cosmetics. She didn't ask for anything new. As we're going to see, the other nashim, in addition to the cosmetics that was provided, they also asked for special things, special clothing, special treatments, special cosmetics that the king did not provide. But Esther did not ask for anything extra. But when it came to the monosecho, it's spelled choser. And being that this word monosecho is juxtaposed to tam urukecho, which is mole, the question is, why is tam urukecho mole and monosecho choser? And the answer is because she refused to eat. Even though they provided her with a full diet that all of the other nashim ate, she refused to take, to accept the diet, the monosecho, because it was not kosher. And if it was not kosher, how did she conceal herself? That was a talent where she was able to refuse eating non-kosher food and not reveal that she was Jewish. To give her and then they gave her seven maidens that were fitting to give her from the king, from the house of the king. Haggai recognized that this woman is unique, and he changed her. He upgraded her status. Obviously, there were different levels, different categories, finalists. It's a beauty pageant. Different degrees, degrees of beauty. He upgraded her to the best. She had the best servants, the best food, the best cosmetics, because Haggai put his bets on her. He expected she to be selected as the queen. Let's see Rashi first, Pasuk Tes. Vayivahel es tamukecho, zoris umamaher bishalom mishal kulon. Haggai was swift. He was diligent in preparing her needs more than the other women. Haruyos lo sesla, lishar sa, to serve her. Seven nashim to serve her. V'chein oisim l'kulon. All of the women had seven servants. It's really shocking. What do you need seven servants? Most people today don't even have one servant. You have seven servants. And what exactly did she need to do? What was she doing there in the palace? It's really, 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 really mysterious. What was necessary?
Every big star doesn't have a whole entourage of
What did she have to do in the palace already? I don't know. It's very, very bizarre. What is the famous drasha? Let's discuss this right now. Number one, the reason why she had seven servants was she wanted to conceal the fact that she was Jewish. Because if she had one servant that was appointed by the king, when it would come Shabbos, the servant would say, how come you're not working today? On Saturday, you don't do anything. 6 days a week, you cook, you sew, you do malacha, you turn on the lights, and Shabbos, ooh, I know the secret. You're a Jew. You're a Jewess. Now I'm going to be rich. I'm going to sell the secret to the National Enquirer for $1 million. There'll be an expose. And therefore, everyone obviously was very curious to understand her identity, and obviously secrets must have leaked from the palace what exactly she does. So she had only one or two servants. They would figure out that on Saturday she does not work. But if she has seven servants, and every single servant is appointed for a specific day, then the one that serves on Saturday and sees that she does not turn on the lights, does not do malacha, figures she never turns on the lights. Not on Saturday, not on Sunday, and not on Friday. She might be a Muslim, she might be a Christian. She doesn't do anything. She never does anything. So this was a technique that she employed, according to the Chazal, according to the Gemara. It wasn't something which it was... See, Rashi here says, something very, very powerful. V'chein oisin l'kulon. According to Rashi's first interpretation, the seven servants was not unique to her. It was something that all of the women had. So there's nothing special. But according to Chazal, no, it was unique to her. All of the other women in the palace that were being pampered, prepared for Achashverosh, they did not have seven servants. They had one or two. It was only Esther who demanded seven servants as a technique to conceal the fact that she was Jewish. That's a simple interpretation. That when it says that she has seven servants, it was not unique to her. All of them had seven servants. All of the nashim that were brought to the palace had seven servants. But then when Rashi goes on to say that I was saying Darshu Masha Darshu, no, it was not Lukulon. Esther was the only one that had seven servants because she wanted to hide that she was Jewish. Okay, then there's another Chazal. The other Chazal says that when going to see the Targum in a few minutes, very long, fascinating Targum, that the reason why she had
had seven servants was to keep track of time. Because, and this is extremely bizarre, what she knew, she couldn't keep track of time. Even the simplest person knows what day of the week it is. But it seems that life in the palace was so complex, you lose track of time. And it would be, she does not know when Shabbos. So therefore, she had a special Shabbos servant. The Shabbos servant, when she will see in a few moments, she gave them different names. She gave them names. And she gave the name of the servant that appeared on Shabbos. She called her, we'll see, with a Targum word for Shabbos. So when Shabbos comes to serve, this was a reminder that today is Shabbos. How could it be that she lost track of time? It's very, very bizarre. I'll just give out a little bit of Hagdam, is that this is the Tzor of Golos. In Golos, we lose track of time. It also fits well into in Hanukkah. The example is Asara. Example is Shiva Asa B'Tamuz. We commemorate the breach of the walls of Yerushalayim on the 17th day of Tamuz. That was certainly the case in the term, during the time of the Bayis Sheni. But during the time of the Bayis Rishon in Yirmiyah, it is recorded that the walls of Yerushalayim were breached on the 9th day of Tevis, which would then mean that instead of 3 weeks, it's really 30 days. It's exactly from the 9th day of Tevis to the 9th day of Av. It will be a 30-day period between the time the walls were breached and the time that Yerushalayim, the Mikdash, was destroyed. So why then do we commemorate the breach of the walls on the 17th day? So there are many answers. One answer is that we're focusing on the Bayis Sheni. We're not focusing on the Bayis Rishon. The Gemara says another answer. The truth is the walls were breached on the 17th day of Tammuz, even during the time of the Bayis Rishon. And the only reason why it's recorded in Sefer Yirmiyah that it was on the 9th day was because they lost track of time. The Korban, the siege was so intense, they lost track of time. And the mystery is, how could Klal Yisrael lose track of time? It says in the Pasuk, Ki hi chochmaschem ubinaschem le'enei ha'anim. That when the, what is it about Klal Yisrael that is so intriguing to the Umos Olam? It's the mathematical formulas, the calculation of time. We're able to figure out the Sod to Ibur, yeah?
There's an aspect of that in Hanukkah as well.
Oh, exactly. That's what I'm coming to one moment. Is that when the Pasuk explicitly says that when the Umos Olam look at the Jewish people, they focus on their Chochmah, what fascinates them the most is the Koyach of Zman. The Koyach of Zman. Here, when Klal Yisrael are about to be exiled, what is the gift that has been lost from us? The koyach of zman, calculation of time. And the pasuk emphasizes that even the calendar day of when the Chorban began with the breach of the walls happened during, on a day which they didn't even know the calendar day. It's something that's shameful. It's so embarrassing. And that is part of the tzar of the Chorban. We have even lost track of time that we recorded in Sefer Yirmiyah the wrong day. So as Rimchol just said, Chanukah, why did Chazal, when the miracle, this explains a lot of different yom can be explained in this fashion. Let's even take a step before the Chanukah. Let's talk about Moshe Rabbeinu. Yitzias Mitzrayim. Kichatzois Halayla. Yitzias Mitzrayim was described at Kichatzois Halayla. A moment in time. A moment in time that we know that you do not know. Just the opposite. Is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu? I'm not even going to tell you exactly Chatzois, because since it's Tagmine Paro, you are the ones who don't know how to keep track of time. HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows exactly the exact moment. If I'm going to tell you Chatzos B'diyuk, you're going to think that HaKadosh Baruch Hu made a mistake. But the point that Moshe was making in this interpretation is, we have the Koyach of Zman, you, the Umos Olam, don't have the Koyach of Zman. So for you, I'll tell you that the Geula for Klal Yisrael will come in during an approximate time. Because you, Shemazels, you don't have, we have the Koyach of Zman, you do not have the Koyach. That was the Geula. Galus is just the opposite, is the loss of Zman. Chanukah, the major miracles of Chanukah was the Nitzachon, was the balance, was war, was the Koyach of Shavuor. Klal Yisrael was able to overcome the Umos Olam, the Gibod of Yad Chaloshim, Rabbi Admatim, Etrem, Yad Harim, Chulu, Lechulu. So why then do we focus on the Chanukah, the lighting of the menorah? Because the lighting of the menorah is the Koyach of Zman. is the koyach that we are lemaila min hazman. The gift of zman kihi chokmaschem ubinaschem le'enei ha'anim is the sod ha'ibur. The sod ha'ibur is zman, which doesn't just mean that we are experts in zman. We capture the totality of zman. We're lemaila min zman. To the menorah will last. The whole idea of the menorah lighting 8 days is we're lemaila min hazman. So here, this idea also comes into play with Esther. Esther over here, it's during the time, the heat, the most intense moment of Golos. This here is the most intense moment of Esther Panim. 9 years. 9 years Esther is locked up in the palace. How could it be that Esther, Hamalka, the daughter, a descendant of Shol HaMelech, someone Chazal connect to Sar Imenu at Tzadeges, Hadassah, he Esther, how could it be that she's taken to the palace, Achashverosh? This is the spitz of Golos. The spitz, the Beis HaMikdash has been destroyed. Achashverosh and his 10 sons have issued a stop order on the rebuilding of the Beis HaMikdash. And now, now Tzadekis is taken as a slave to be taken as a queen to the king of Achashverosh. This is an intense moment of the Anochi Haster Aster Pona Bayomahu, and therefore when there's Golos, Zman is lost. Zman, even the days of the week. Forget about the calendar day. Even the Yom HaShabbos is lost. And therefore, it's an appella. And therefore, Esther, Chazal are telling us she went to extreme measures. To us, it doesn't make any sense, but we don't really appreciate what's going on here. It's more symbolic, extreme measures, that even during this intense moment of Golos, you have to keep track of time. Because this is our only hope to return to Geula is to the koyach of the Kedushas Hazman, which is basics. The bread and butter is Shabbos. We start 6 days a week. We come to Shabbos Kodesh. Yeah.
Actually, I was referring to in the Hanukkah story that one of the mitzvahs targeted by the Greeks
Chodesh
was Kiddush HaKodesh.
Kiddush HaKodesh, Zman. That's right.
So Levi says it's the first mitzvah, HaKodesh HaZel
Ospen. Zman.
Slave time is meaningless.
Yes, when you're a free man,
you're on
time. Time, so time, you see this theme appear over and over in Chazal. Golos and Geula, there are many different examples of the Koyach HaZman, and here that's coming to play. It's very significant in the intense moment of Golos. What is Esther doing? She's keeping track of time. For all of these years, keeping track of time with Misharsim, 7 Misharsim, and she calls them by names to know exactly when is Shabbos Kodesh. Hayoyim Yoyim Rishon LeShabbos, Hayoyim Yoyim Sheni LeShabbos, not to take that concept lightly. Okay, on another level, the reason why she's doing something extra special for Shabbos is because the Yisod of Yadus is Shabbos. And many people, we all struggle with this. I mean, in the Klal Yisrael, we all of the great minds are struggling. What is the secret to Jewish continuity? So there's a very big debate. Some people will tell you Jewish continuity is your connection to Eretz Yisrael. Birthright. You have to spend millions of dollars to take college grads or high school students and have them experience Eretz Yisrael. If you go to Eretz Yisrael, you'll have the experience, you're guaranteed not to intermarry, you're guaranteed to have a connection. Others disagree. The Jewish continuity, the secret is Talmud Torah, study of Torah. You have to learn Jewish education. You teach in day school, there has to be billions of dollars spent. There should be some degree for every Jew, Jewish education, and that will keep them on the straight and narrow. Others say, the key is Shabbos. Shabbos across America. A Shabbos project. If there's an appreciation of Shabbos, you're guaranteed to survive. That will keep the spark of Yiddishkeit burning within you. It will hold back into marriage. Esther here, again, we are now during the most intense moment of Golos. V'yonochi haster aster ponai bayomahu. And what is Esther doing to preserve Jewish continuity? Shabbos. 7 days a week. There are 7 maidservants. Everyone, you know, you see on the online video who is there serving in the palace on this day, who is there serving in the Yehaya. It's this maid, because it's Shabbos Kodesh, and all of the other maids are all hachana
preparation to come to Shabbos Kodesh.
The Malbim makes a very interesting distinction. He says, the word Horu'uyos law says law, is she chose her servants that she wanted, Horu'uyos law, seven Jewish servants, but they didn't know who she was, but she knew that they were
Jewish. They were Jewish.
And so that's why she chose Horu'uyos
law. She was who? Not that it was fitting for her. The one that she decided. Right. She selected.
Why did you find before at the time it's called Ega and later it's Egoi?
That's just a grammatical. If it's the end of an expression, it turns into a komatz. If it's in the middle of an expression, then it's a patach. It's like Ephraim and Ephroim. If it's in the middle of a pasuk, it's Ephraim. If it's in an esnachta or a soif pasuk, Ephroim. Yes. All names. There are many names. Whenever the Torah enumerates the names of the shvatim, the names of different ministers, so it makes that distinction.
I think the Gemara Tosis disagrees, but the Gemara says that she did this situation. She did eat chazer. And Tosis says chazer.
It's machlokes, right? It's machlokes in the Rishonim. Did she eat? Did she eat chazer or did she eat seeds?
The Gemara says she ate chazer. Tosis says Rashi says chazer. So she ate chazer.
Right. So it's machlokes. It's machlokes.
What refers to chazer? Different lashon.
Kidle chazire.
What does kidle mean?
I don't know.
Fattens,
I don't know. Okay, let's see the targum. It's a very long targum. It's a very interesting targum. Here, let's see. Pasuk test in the targum. Vatitav. Okay, vatitav usheferos ulemto beino. The young girl was beautiful in the eyes of Hege. The young girl was beautiful in his eyes. Referring to Esther.
Yeah.
The it anas chisto kodomohi. It was elevated. It was lifted up. Chesed kodomohi before him. Now, some of the commentators learned that. Why do we have to emphasize that she had chesed? So the answer is, some want to bring her proof that she really wasn't so beautiful.
Right.
She really wasn't so beautiful, and chut shel chesed moshech olecha. For whatever reason, stranger things have happened, right? I'm sure stranger shidduchim have come about, right? I'm sure you can go online and they show all the celebrities who are married to people that you would never in your wildest dreams would match them up, right? Stranger things have happened. So what's the answer? Shidduchim has a life of its own. Chut shel chesed moshech olecha, and that's what the pasuk Leviyah says. Vatitav hanra be'enav, the nar was fitting in his eyes. And don't make a mistake and think that it was a given that this woman is fit for the king. It's only because vatiso chesed lefanav. Chesed means you don't deserve it. You don't deserve it. It's a gift.
Different words, that's chain.
Well, chain is even a different word. It's chesed and chain. Chain is also matnas chinam. Chain comes, but chesed is also matnas chinam. We say do chesed. Do chesed. Gemilas chasadim. What is the essence of gemilas chasadim? You don't deserve it. You have not paid for this service. I'm giving you a gift. Chesed on a very simple level means you don't deserve it and it's more than what you deserve. So why did Hege, and why then did Achashverosh, and also could very well be Achashverosh, Melech Tipishaya, whoever you're telling me is beautiful, I'll marry. He trusted Hege. Hege was he was the expert. Achashverosh doesn't know the difference between women. It's not his thing. You know, I know this about two talking about major league Talmidei Chachamim. We're talking over here at the Spitz Talmidei Chachamim, top of the line. They commissioned. They were involved in the writing of a Sefer Torah. And it was very obvious. Now, when you write a Sefer Torah, there's a big market. Unfortunately, there are a lot of people who need parnasa, and they're writing Sefer Torah, and there are different levels. You can buy a Sefer Torah for $25,000, and you can buy a Sefer Torah today for $100,000. And it's not proportional. Once you get to $30,000, $40,000, each level you go up is not, it's not really the ksav. And what's the difference? The beauty of the ksav. There's halacha, has all the tagim, the koitzah shel yud, and everything is written in proportion with all of the hidurim, and the best klaf, and the best diyoy, and the best and the Yorei Shemayim. But after everything is said and done, does it look nice? Does it have a yofi? And there are different styles. They're very, it's interesting. The more you study.
Yeah. I mean, I asked in this farm store a couple of them, what's the difference in prices
yeah.
for these various things? And he said it depends how much the cipher wants for his, and we charge accordingly.
Right. But how much the cipher is going to.
20% or 30%. So if he says, I got to get 30,000, right. so I got to charge 36.
But a cipher is not going to have, who does not have a beautiful ksav, is right. not going to ask. No one's going to buy it.
They have a price that they.
And they have a price, right? They write price.
Right. They have to pay him.
But there's a market for that also.
Right. So. I remember talking to someone who's very close to this Talmud Chacham, and he said to me that he was very surprised that, not surprised, he says that this Talmud Chacham, he's a Gaon Sheva Gaonim, but he has no taste. He has no appreciation, and I should say, he has no appreciation of a beautiful ksav. He really just doesn't, it's not his thing. Different, his talents are in Lomdis and Yerushalayim. He just doesn't have that koyach of yoifi of appreciating a beautiful ksav.
So I was 30,000 sifri total.
What?
$30,000 for him.
Well, no, he bought a very.
Then he does appreciate.
This is just struck because I had recently I had an interesting conversation with someone. Someone recently had a tefillin written. Okay, he had a certain sefer write the tefillin. He told me what's the mile of these. So he says that this person, Rav Yashiv, the Sof Yomov, selected his parshios. He wanted a new pair of Rabbeinu Tam Tfilin at the end of his life. And they presented Rav Yashiv with I don't know how many different samples. And this person was picked. This young sofer was picked. They showed Rav Yashiv, I don't know, maybe 10 samples. He liked this ksav. And this person wrote a pair of tefillin for Rabbi, a pair of Rabbeinu Tam tefillin for Rabbi Yashiv. So you can imagine this person's stocks shot to the sky. Now everyone wants him to write for their bar mitzvah boy. They want him to be the sofer. Why? If he's good enough for Rabbi Yashiv, if Rabbi Yashiv selected him, his sample for Rabbi Yashiv's tefillin, he's certainly good enough for me. So I have a relative who actually asked him to write tefillin, and he wrote a pair of tefillin, and I said, can you please be so kind to send me a photocopy of the tefillin? I want to see the tefillin. I'm very curious to see the parashios. So he sent me. I didn't have a chance to look at it, to really look at it very carefully, but I looked at it. It's nice, but to me at least, I spent a lot of time years ago in Safras. It didn't appear to me to be anything like wow. Like, it's nice, it's okay, but like I've seen nicer. So I asked someone who was involved. So I said to him, "Tell me, I don't understand. I saw this. He paid a lot of money for this. He charged quite a bit of money. He paid a lot of money, and it's taka very nice. But like, why did Rabbi Yashiv select? Is it because Rabbi Yashiv held that it's taka beautiful? Or maybe he saw certain hidurim in the ksav? That you know, the hidurim in the ksav does not necessarily translate into a beautiful handwriting. If the tag is the way he likes the certain type of tag for a yud, a certain type of a curve, a certain hidurim in how. So he said to me, well, the truth is this person, if you look very carefully, he has a lot of hidurim in his ksav that other seferim do not have. He's told me about the lamids and about the mems. He does it a certain way. And he said to me, I agree with you. When you look at the ksav and the big picture, it's okay. It's nothing special. He does have some hidurim. And he also was bothered with the same question. What exactly did Rabbi Yashiv see in this ksav that he selected it? But that's really what it means. There was some quality in this ksav that Rabbi Yashiv picked up on. It was beautiful. There's no question about it. It's a beautiful ksav. No one's denying that. He would not have been selected. The person said to me, the big question is not why he picked him. The question is, how did this guy become a candidate for all of the from obviously, they probably only showed him not more than 10 samples. You're not going to go show him 100 samples. So, can you imagine all those 10 seferim? Whoever he would pick, you have a parnasa.
right away. Then you have it on your shingle, on your resume. I wrote the Tumim for Abel Yashiv, so you'll have parnasa for the rest of your life. You'll be. You know, it's not so easy to sell tefillin. So what did this guy do? How did he manipulate himself to get in to be one of the candidates to write the parashas, to be one of the candidates for selection?
He has to be good to one side on
tefillin. Yeah.
Why is this one not?
Yeah.
He says no. It depends on whose hand it is. It has nothing. It's who wrote it.
Right? Who the person who wrote it? Rabbi Yashiv. That was he did not know who wrote it. Rabbi Yashiv did not know the siphon. That was I did not add that point. That they showed him samples and he did not know. He trusted that these were all Yorei Shemayim. Whoever the Gabbai was vetted out the siphon, the Yorei Shemayim. And the question is just a matter of. What he likes. So it says here, Vatitav Chesed Lifonov. This is an extra expression. She was pleasing. Don't make a mistake and think that she was pleasing because she actually deserved it. It was because Chod Shel Chesed Yirak Rokos Hoysa. Esther was lukewarm. She was average. Green is the color in the middle of the spectrum. Right on the color spectrum, green is not in the middle.
Yes, you're right. I mean, I have a different view of this based on the Maharal. The way he says, no, it's like olive. But her complexion was average.
Yeah.
So that anybody of any nationality could identify with her.
Okay.
Her nationality was.
That's unknown. A different approach.
So she
that's
had a kind of a
universal. Generic. That's a different.
Right.
Okay, this is an entirely different approach. In fact, many years ago, I saw online, they've taken, what they've done is they've taken people, men, women from all over the world, images, Orientals, Jews, Christians, Irishmen, people living in Australia on the North Pole, they've taken, and they've morphed. They've taken an image, and they threw through the computer, and they combine the average. It's very interesting. They combine. It's a very sophisticated technique. They combine all of the qualities of every single nationality into what does the perfect person look like? The person who actually exactly it says this: a person who captures within them the features of every single living person on this world. You look at the person, you should know it looked like a very nothing special. It was very, very surprising. You would think now you would see the most beautiful person. It's like you wouldn't give it a second look. You would not give it, at least for me, it looks like a very boring look. Nothing, it's like not something which is malas. Yeah, not something which is malas chen. So that would answer your question. Maybe that's really what it means. Is that, you know, you would expect that if you would take the qualities of every, if you would take the average of every single nationality and morph it into one image, which they can do with computers, you would get this exquisitely beautiful human being. And guess what? It was surprising to me, and I think to many others, it's just the opposite. You get, through the combination, the average, the most boring, dull creature that you can create, a goylem. And in fact, you learn from this is that what makes someone beautiful is their uniqueness, is the fact that they're not part of just the masses. There's something, a special quality. So that really ends what you're saying. Yirak, these two ideas go together. She was average. She was nothing special. And because she was average and nothing special, that is why every single nationality can say she's one of ours.
Right, and therefore, that's protected.
That protected her from them figuring out that she is a Jew. No one, she didn't have a big nose. Right, so okay, let's go further. Now let's see the Targum. The Targum says, "Ushe for us, what?"
Some people
what? They like the big nose.
Yeah.
Okay, the nose is the ikar tzuras upon him. Ushe for us, uleim ta be'eino. She was pleasing the it anas chasido kodamo, and she brought forth favor chesed before him before hege. Now here comes the interesting part. Ufaked leis behola, and he commanded quickly, swiftly, yos samtar. That is the cosmetics we had it before. Revusa, the abundant cosmetics, v'yos mat nosoha ham nichin. Okay, now he's eating more things here, which I do not know what this means. Gifts, matno soha, the monos. What are the monos? Many of the commentators means food. Monos means a diet. It means a diet. Portions of food to eat in order to look well, to look good.
This week's partially we have it.
Okay, but here it does not say. Here it says, over here, something over here says, matno soha ham nichin. Okay, I do not know what the word hamnichin means, but it means some type of gift. And then the next words are something which is not saying in the pasuk. Ulevushei malchusa limhevei yehivin law, clothing. Okay, where does it say that in the pasuk? All it says in the pasuk is es tamru keha v'es mono seha loses law. Maybe the word loses law is the big day malchus. Targum says there were three things that are being brought: the samtar. That's the cosmetics.
Yeah.
Then it says the mat no soha, okay, that gifts. And then it says ulvushe malchusa, clothing. Three things are being brought to Esther. The Yivin law. Can now come the seven maidservants. The Yos Shiva Ule Mosa, seven maidservants, the Shamashusa, to serve her, Shiva Yomo de Shabbat on the 7 days of the week. Now what were their names? The first name was Cholta Havas Mishamsha Kadma'a. Cholta means like Techila. Cholta means Cholta, the first. But what does it mean? It comes from the word Techila. Okay, I actually have a translation of this. Cholta. A moment. Okay, the first day it was called Cholta Haschala. The word Cholta comes from the word Haschala. Haschala. Okay, there is no hay, but the ches and the lamet. Now the tough comes at the end. Okay, but that's Haschalta. Next. So Yoma, the first day was Yoma. V'yas shiva ulei masa l'shama shusa shiva yoma d'shabta cholza have m'shamsha kadma, the first day kadma b'chad b'shabta, on the first day. Next, rok isa, that was the name of the servant for the second day, betrayin b'shabta, served her on day two. Why? Because on day two, by yom elokim yehi rokia b'sochamoyim.
So therefore, the first one,
the second one was
so
called.
So go back to the first one for a sec. We're talking about their names parallel the
creation.
So the first was the
right.
First day of creation.
Haschala, the first day of creation. Second day is the Rakia. The third day was Ginu Nesa, Bitlas B'Shabbat. What does it mean, Ginu Nesa? The Tzmachim. There's a garden, a Gina, because the Tzmachim grew on day three. Next, on the Nehoirisa, is light, the Ma'oirais. That was created on day four, Ba'arba B'Shabbosa. Rochashisa, the creepy crawlers, the insects, the animals. Rochashisa B'Chamesh B'Shabbata. Churfisa, now this is a hard word. Churfisa B'Shita B'Shabbata. What does it mean? What does it mean, Churfisa? It means quick. The word means Churfisa Loshon Mimaheres. He explains here swiftly, and the significance over here is that they were the lechein kara eshem hamisharish lufanehu erev Shabbos. Why? Because you have to be quick. Now this is the on erev Shabbos, you have to be quick to prepare for Shabbos.
Short
Shabbosos. So for short Shabbosos, Friday is a day when you have to be quick on your feet, because before you blink, it's already Shabbos. Especially this Shabbos is the hardest of all the Shabbosos, because you have to daven mincha, and you have to light Chanukah candles, and you have to light near Shabbos, and you have to be in shul on time. And it's also one of the shortest Shabbosos of the entire year, if not the shortest Shabbos of the entire year. So Shabbos is a day, because of the tierness of Shabbos, you have to be swift on your feet.
I mean,
so it's
comes in late.
Even when you always have to be prepared because right. The Yetzer Hara, the last minute. So it's very interesting over here. Is look what the Targum over here is doing. The first 6 days of the week, he's calling the 6 days of the week after what was created right. On that day. But when it comes to Shabbos, there's no shortage of things that were created. Man was created on Erev Shabbos. Yet the Targum says Esther did not name her servant after what right. Was created, but named the servant what needs to be done on this day. On this day, you need to be quick on your feet because Shabbos is coming. You have to be zoris in Shabbos.
You could say Chorfisa means sharp intellect.
Human beings, they're sharp. That's another idea. Okay, he doesn't say. Okay, here in who I'm quoting from, doesn't even say I'm quoting. He doesn't even say maybe it's his own idea. Okay, it's one idea. And the last one is very simple. And Shabbos is called Rego Isa Biyavad Shabbato. Okay, Rego Isa means rest. Rest, that was the name of the servant who told on Shabbos. Kulon Tzadikosa. So it says all of the maid servants were righteous. So Rabbi Meski mentioned, all of them were righteous. They were tzadikim. They were all Jews, seemingly. V'chazer limit Allah, mechlo u'mishtiyah al yideihen. And it was fitting for her food to be brought to Esther through them. I guess it means that it was kosher food. If these people were serving the food, they were making the food, then we have to trust them that they're making kosher food. What?
God?
No bishalakum. Min besa de malchusa, v'shani yosavios ule mosaha, le'otava, lahon, to the best. Ulefano kushon, like the lashon of a mefunuk. The most delicate things, finicky, the base nishaya of the nashim. They got the best and the highest quality of food and drink and accommodations were provided for her.
So she gave these names.
Yes, that's what the Targum says. The Targum says that she renamed her servants, and she renamed them after the days of the week in order to keep track of time, in order to keep track of what day is Shabbos, and each day of the week, it's like Hayom Yom Rishon B'Shabbos. She didn't just give them a name, she gave them a name in relation to the Brias HaOlam, so that every single day she is also fulfilling the Kedusha of Shabbos. Hayom Yom Rishon B'Shabbos, Hayom Yom Sheni B'Shabbos. Oh, you're called Rokia, because this is Yom Sheni B'Shabbos. You're called light, Hayom Yom Revi B'Shabbos, v'chul v'chul. So that is what she is trying to accomplish, the Kedusha. If they would switch days, then the world would come to an end. Then there would be a lot of confusion. Okay, now the commentators, a short idea. The commentators, they have, let's just finish with two short things. Why did this miracle have to come about in such a disgraceful way, where a nice Jewish girl is abducted by Achashverosh, which Chazal are not very, they don't have very, very complimentary, they don't have a very
controversial
description for him. He's a bear. He was a, he needs all of these women. So the Mepharshim tell us because the miracle comes is a reflection to where Klal Yisrael is holding. For example, during the time of the building of the Bayis Sheni, the Pasuk says that it was really meant to be, Chazal tell us it was meant to be, they were meant to be miracles that were greater in quality and quantity than the miracles that occurred at the time of Yetzias Mitzrayim. There's a Pasuk which compares Yetzias Mitzrayim to the building of the Bayis Sheni. However, when they rebuilt the Bayis Sheni, there were no great miracles. They came, they got on ships, they got on camels, there was no kanfei nesharim, they came, they built the Beis HaMikdash with labor, it took time, it took effort, it was hard, it wasn't easy. Miracles didn't happen, and the reason is because they were not roy, they were not deserving. Even if they would have been on a higher spiritual level, Hashem would have provided and done for them miracles. Same thing over here. Klal Yisrael this time was suffering, one of the major problems of this time was intermarriage. And this is brought out by Ezra. Not that much later, when they finally come to the Bayis Sheni, the major problem in Klal Yisrael was intermarriage. Today also. Today the statistics are even up to 70% in the United States intermarriage. This was the major problem which Ezra and Nehemiah made an issue and demanded that people get divorced and they solve this problem. Therefore, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu now is coming to bring a miracle to Klal Yisrael, it's a bittersweet miracle. I really would prefer to bring the miracle in a much more refined and much more beautiful way, where Haman will be defeated and
and everything will be fine and good, but because you're not fully deserving of the miracle, and the main problem at this point is there's intermarriage, I'm going to bring you a miracle, but I'm going to bring the miracle with a message. You'll all look back at this and say, what a shame. It was an Eis Ratzon. Hashem did a miracle, but he brought about the miracle through an act of intermarriage. And that caused Klal Yisrael to reflect, we have an intermarriage problem. So it's a miracle, and it's a very happy time, but it's a bittersweet miracle, because there is built into the miracle a very sharp message for Klal Yisrael. And that is why a lot of the commentators say the same idea, why it had to come about in such a way. Okay, the next idea, which really is the next part, just a little bit running ahead, is Esther's coming out to the king, and Esther is not revealing to Ahasuerus who she is. Why? So there are many reasons, because there was fear. If Ahasuerus would discover that she's Jewish, she would be removed, or they would make an investigation which would point to Mordechai. Mordechai would be in danger. And Vashti, we're coming in the aftermath of Vashti, when Vashti wanted to wipe out the Jewish people, it would be problematic. But there's something a little bit deeper, and that is, in Golos, what is the proper role of a Jew? Is it proper for a Jew to serve among the Umos Olam with their payas out and their tzitzis dangling and a big black yarmulke and black hat? Or maybe it's better in Golos, you should hide the fact that you're a Jew. Don't provoke the Umos Olam by publicly displaying your Jewishness. This is a debate which continues to go on throughout history. What is the proper role of a Jew when he lives in Golos among Goyim? I have a friend, I had davened with him on Shabbos, so he works in the technology field, and he deals with all the big names, with Apple and Google and Adobe, and he's always going to California for conventions and seminars, and he always struggles with this. He's from Shema Shabbos. Should he wear his tzitzis out? Should he wear a yarmulke? Should he demand kosher food? Or just come to the events and just not eat? And he says sometimes he has found that when the people that he works with discover that he's Jewish, it makes him incredible Kiddush Hashem. They have a whole new, especially, we don't understand, because we're living over in the metropolitan area, New York, everything is Jewish in New York. When you go to California, it's not like that. You go out into the Silicon Valley, it's a very different, this is how he explains to me, it's a very, very different environment. And sometimes he has a very positive experience, and sometimes not such a positive experience.
To Jews
who are not religious and non-Jews, and he struggles with this daily. What is the image he should present when he deals with different types of people? And this is something which has been going on through the ages. The German Jews, the Yekesh Jews, they typically are very private. They, among the Umos Olam, you have a secular name. You do not wear a head covering. You don't reveal your Jewishness. Among the Hasidic world, no, be proud. Be proud that you're Jewish. If they have a problem, that's their problem. It's not your problem. This is something which is a very difficult struggle, and Megillas Esther, to a very large degree, sheds light on this issue. Ein Esther Magedes Es Ama V'es Melat. That's the passage we're coming to. She did not reveal to Ahasuerus who's her identity. And there are many reasons. There are many, the Mepharshim are filled with reasons. But the bottom line is, she did not. It was a private, this is Golos, this is the Haskola of Golos, and in Golos, the approach is privacy. It's none of your business, my religious affiliations. Privacy, it's not necessarily the best thing to display your religious beliefs. Okay, we'll continue with Hashem.